Studio 360.
I was talking recently with my pal John Heilemann. He co-wrote the terrific book Game Change about the 2008 election, and he co-hosted the great Showtime series about the 2016 campaign called The Circus. And he is here now. John, thanks for coming in.
Hey, Kurt.
So, Barack Obama. You're friends with him. He had lots and lots of cool A-list musicians perform at the White House. Trump has been struggling to book people for his inauguration. So far, as we record, he has booked the Rockettes, most of the Morbid Tabernacle Choir, and a second-place finisher from America's Got Talent. Now, why is that?
You don't consider that the A-list, Kurt?
Well, it's a list.
I think your East Coast cultural snobbery is showing.
No doubt.
I mean, let's be fair. Hollywood is Democratic.
Right.
And you think about over our lifetimes, every big Democratic event is filled with A-list celebrities. Every Republican event struggles. You get Lee Greenwood as, you know.
But some an inauguration, at least, ought to be different,
you
right?
You would think. But, you know, this is – if you combine the general Republican – lack of affinity with, affiliation with the creative community and with Hollywood. If you combine that general bedrock with the specifics of Trump and the degree to which for many people in the creative community.
He's just beyond the pale.
He's beyond the pale. They don't think they are in the not my president crowd.
Right.
And the notion of them schlepping out to Washington, D.C. to go and perform at this event is beyond the pale for a lot of them.
And Kiss turned him down.
Yeah, that seems a little weird, right? You think Gene Simmons. If you can't get Gene Simmons, who can you get?
Well, when you've lost Gene Simmons.
Right, right. No, it's – look, I mean, I think the reality is that –
But like
this,
Kiss would have performed for a normal Republican.
Kiss would have probably performed for pretty much anyone.
Yeah.
You would have thought. I mean,
yeah.
You know.
That to me is the litmus test.
I know. It's a little odd, right? But I do think it just speaks to the deep division and, you know, all the obvious things that one
right.
would say about how strange this presidency is.
Right. I read recently that at Mar-a-Lago, his club slash home, that there's a singer and a little band that's there, and he often asks the guy to sing and them to play My Way. Did you experience that?
No, I did. No, I did not experience that. Although, you know, again, now who's going to really criticize someone for having someone play My Way?
Yeah, no, it's just it's so perfect. It's if you're writing this character in fiction, it's like, nah, a little on the nose.
Well, as is the obsession with Citizen Kane, you know?
Right.
I mean, there's some of his taste is, you know, again, it's a great movie.
Yes.
I mean, we're not going to knock Citizen Kane.
Right.
But the fact that Donald Trump loves Citizen Kane, it's so on the nose, you couldn't put it in the film script of this.
Let's play a clip of Errol Morris, the great documentarian, was making a documentary about people's beloved movies. And he interviewed Donald Trump talking about Citizen Kane.
Citizen Kane was really about accumulation. And at the end of the accumulation, you see what happens, and it's not necessarily all positive. I think you learn in Kane that maybe wealth isn't everything, because he had the wealth, but he didn't have the happiness. In real life, I believe that wealth does, in fact, isolate you from other people.
I mean, I find that amazing. And I also, by the way, you spent time with him. That sounds like a lot more than 10 years ago. That sounds like a young man who
Yes.
could put sentences together in a clear and you know, impeccable way.
Yes. Well, and again, I mean, none of the things that he said in that interview would pass muster as deep insight. On the other hand, I remember when I saw this originally when it surfaced in the course of the campaign and thinking, well, that's, you know, that's a relatable, like the things he's saying are not like monstrous or horrid.
No, it was humanizing.
Perfectly humanizing. Like that's a perfectly natural, not wildly sophisticated, but a perfectly natural like reaction to this movie. And it's a perfectly kind of sensible read on, you know, in a kind of basic way.
Right. Even as I was, you know, because I had never assumed that he was going to lose and thinking about Silver Linings last fall, I was thinking, well, if he wins, it will be – it's not worth it, but it would be an incredible opportunity for public protest art of a kind we've seen since, for instance, in Russia over the last 5 or 10 years.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
Our own Pussy Riot, our own whatevers.
Well, and an incredible – I mean, again, we all know, just to state the obvious, that, you know, people of color, women – they are all obviously massive contributors to the realm of art and culture, but those groups in particular that feel particularly disenfranchised in Trump's America, this could be, you know, an incredible boost for their voices will be amplified in a way that would never have been the case under Hillary Clinton.
Well, but, yes. And
incited to make a very different kind of art than they would have made under those circumstances that had what we all assumed happened was going to happen happened.
Right. And so what kind of art do you think will get made because of the Trump presidency?
To me, you know, when the new Tribe Called Quest album came out, literally on the Friday after the election, and it's a brilliant record, and it's so much of what of it was driven by what had been happening. All you black folks, you must go. All you Mexicans, you must go. And all you poor folks, you must go. Muslims and gays, boy, we hate your ways. So all you bad folks, you must go. That's a powerful record by a group that hadn't made a record for a really long time. And it was, for a lot of people, it was a communal kind of balm to like huddle around the record. Went to number one on the Billboard charts on the basis of the number of people who were like, man, Tribe Called Quest is back and this record is really political. Right. And it feels like a record I want to be listening to this weekend after Donald Trump got elected.
Right. It will be, I think... an interesting moment, and sort of have whatever version of a kind of punk reaction might come about.
Well, you make the point. The punk analogy is a great analogy. I mean, now Thatcher and her image has been largely rendered kind of much. She's considered a much safer figure, and she was never seen in the United States as being as threatening as people on the left in Britain did. But in 1978, 1979, through the early 1980s in Britain, Margaret Thatcher was seen as an almost Trump-like figure in the sense that really big British institutions. Socialized medicine, the national railroads, things that were privatized that had never been in the private hands before, things that people in Britain thought were part of their core national inheritance were now being threatened and in some cases not just threatened but in some cases ripped up and rebuilt. And that was the ferment that gave birth to punk in its original form. And so, you know, let's kick out the Tories, the rulers of this land, for they are the enemies.
The one other, I mean, again, there's a fairly limited record of what his actual cultural tastes are. One of the bands he reportedly has been very fond of makes total sense, which is Twisted Sister. Do you remember Twisted Sister?
Oh, we're not going to take it anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah, of course I remember Twisted
Perfect
Sister.
Perfect hit. Title for Donald Trump to love, 70s
we're
Long Island,
take it.
Jersey, glam punk.
Take it. I've wanted to sing on this radio show for a long time, so that was the closest I've ever come. I think that's, you know, look, I mean, it's an anthem. You know, it could have been. I mean, you know, one of the weirdest things that the Trump rallies is the music thing. People have commented on this all the time, and I went to a lot of Trump rallies in 2015 and 2016, and going and hearing, you know, the strange, you know, Broadway show tunes mixed with songs like Sympathy for the Devil
and Neil Young
and Tiny Dancer.
Rockin' the Free World.
Yeah, I mean, just an incredible mix of weird, like, things, a very weird eclectic kind of mixture of songs. Again, some wildly inappropriate, like at a political rally, you can't always get what you want is a weird song to play, right? But that song, you know, We're Not Going to Take It, could have been the theme song of the entire campaign.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it wasn't.
And they've got, you know, they had the hair that they have. He's got the hair that he's got.
Is that band still alive?
I know.
Around?
I'd be shocked if not.
I would be. Now I'm thinking that we have a solution to the thing we started out with, you know, have them play the inauguration. Every ball.
John Heidelman, thank you very much.
Kurt, always, and I do mean always, a pleasure. Ready? Always.